Chapter 14. They say the governor sent for your pa while he was in Peter Marriottsburg. Had him alone for nearly 2 hours. Stephen Erasmus took the pipe out of his mouth and spat down onto the railway lines. In his brown homespun and veltschirn, he did not look like a rich cattleman. Well, we don't need a prophet to tell us what it was about, do we?
No, sir, Sean agreed vaguely.
The train was late, and Sean wasn't listening. He had an entry in the stock register to explain to his father, and he was mentally rehearsing his speech.
Yeah, we know what it's about, all right.
Old Erasmus put the pipe back between his teeth and spoke around it.
It's been 2 weeks now since the British agent was recalled from City Ware's kraal at Gingindaluvo. Ah, in the old days we'd have called out the commando long ago.
He packed his pipe, pushing down onto the glowing tobacco with a calloused forefinger. Sean noticed that the finger was twisted and scarred by the trigger guards of 100 heavy rifles.
You've never been on commando, have you, young?
No, sir.
About time you did then, said Erasmus. About bloody time.
Up on the escarpment, the train whistled, and Sean started guiltily.
There she is.
Erasmus stood up from the bench on which they were sitting, and the station master came out of his office with a rolled red flag in his hand. Sean felt his stomach sink slowly until it stopped somewhere just above his knees. The train ran in past them, whooshing steam and brake whining. The single passenger coach stopped precisely opposite the wooden platform. Erasmus came forward and took Waite's hand.
"Give me more, Steph. More, Waite. They tell me you're the new chairman now. Well done, men."
"Thanks. Did you get my telegram?"
Waite spoke in Afrikaans.
"Yeah, I got it. I told the others. They'll all be out at the Thunis Kraal tomorrow."
"Good," Waite nodded.
"You'll stay for lunch, of course. We've got a lot to talk about."
"Is it what I think it is?"
Erasmus grinned wickedly. The tobacco had stained his beard yellow around his mouth, and his face was brown and wrinkled.
"I'll tell you all about it tomorrow, Steph."
Waite winked at him.
"But in the meantime, you better get that old muzzle loader of yours out of mothballs."
They laughed. One deep down, the other a rusty old laugh.
"Grab the bag, Sean. Let's get home."
Waite took Ada's arm and they walked with Erasmus to the buggy. Ada had on a new dress, blue with leg of mutton sleeves and a picture hat. She looked lovely but a little worried as she listened to them talking. It's strange how women can never face the prospect of war with the same boyish enthusiasm as their men.
"Sean!"
Waite Courtney's roar carried clearly from his study along the corridor and through the closed door of the sitting room. Ada dropped her knitting into her lap and her features set into an expression of unnatural calm. Sean stood up from his chair.
"You should have told him earlier,"
Garrick said in a small voice.
"You should have told him during lunch."
"I didn't get a chance."
"Sean!"
Another blast from the study.
"What's happened now?"
asked Ada quietly.
"It's nothing, Ma. Don't worry about it."
Sean crossed the door.
"Sean?"
Garrick's stricken voice.
"Sean, you won't. I mean, you don't have to tell."
He stopped and sat, hunched in his chair, his eyes full of desperate appeal.
"It's all right, Gary. I'll fix it."
Waite Courtney stood over the desk. Between his clenched fists, the stock register lay open. He looked up as Sean came in and closed the door.
"What's this?"
He prodded the page with a huge, square-tipped finger. Sean opened his mouth and then closed it again.
Come on. I'm listening. Well, Pa.
Well, Pa, be buggered.
Just tell me how you've managed to massacre half the cattle on this farm in a little over a week. It's not half the cattle. It's only 13. Sean was stung by the exaggeration. Only 13, bellowed Waite. Only 13, God Almighty! Shall I tell you how much that is in cash? Shall I tell you how much that is in hard work and time and worry? I know, Pa.
You know?
Waite was panting. Yes, you know everything. There's nothing anyone can tell you, is there? Not even how to kill 13 head of prime oxen.
Pa, don't pa me, by Jesus!
Waite slammed the heavy book closed. Just explain to me how you managed it.
What's dip poisoning? What the bloody hell is dip poisoning? Did you give it to them to drink? Did you stick it up their asses?
The dip was too strong, said Sean. And why was the dip too strong? How much did you put in? Sean took a deep breath. I put in 4 drums. There was silence, and then Waite asked softly,
How much?
4 drums.
Are you mad? Are you raving bloody mad?
I didn't think it would harm them. His carefully rehearsed speech forgotten, Sean unconsciously repeated the words he had heard from Garrick. It was getting late and my leg was... Sean bit the sentence off, and Waite stared at him. Then the confusion cleared from his face.
Gary,
he said.
No,
shouted Sean. It wasn't him. I did it.
You're lying to me.
Waite came round from behind the desk. There was a note of disbelief in his voice. To his knowledge, it was the first time it had ever happened. He stared at Sean, and then his anger was back more violently than before. He'd forgotten the oxen. It was the lie that concerned him now.
By Christ, I'll teach you to tell the truth.
He snatched up his slam bock from the desk.
Don't hit me, Pa!
Sean warned him, backing away. Waite picked up the slambock and swung it down over arm. It hissed softly, and Sean twisted away from it, but the tip of the lash caught his shoulder. Sean gasped at the pain and lifted his hand to it.
You lying little bastard!
Shouted Waite, and he swung the whip sideways as though he were scything wheat, and this time it curled around Sean's chest under his uplifted arm. It split his shirt like a razor cut, and the cloth fell away to expose the red, ridged welt across his ribs and around his back.
Here's some more!
Waite lifted the shambock again, and as he stood with his arm thrown back and his body turned off balance, he knew he had made a mistake. Sean was no longer clutching the whip marks. His hands were held low and his fists were bunched. At the corners, his eyebrows were lifted, giving an expression of satanical fury to his face. He was pale and his lips were drawn back tight, showing his teeth. His eyes, no longer blue but burning black, were on a level with Waite's.
He's coming for me.
Waite's surprise slowed his reflexes. He couldn't bring his whip arm down before Sean was on him. Sean hit him, standing solidly on both feet, bringing the full weight of his body into the punch, hurling it into the middle of Waite's exposed chest. Heart punched, strength oozing out of him, Waite staggered back against the desk. The shambok fell out of his hand, and Sean went after him. Waite had the sensation of being a beetle in a saucer of treacle. He could see and think, but he could barely move.
He saw Sean take three quick paces forward, saw his right hand cocked like a loaded rifle, saw it aimed at his defenseless face. In that instant, while his body moved in slow motion but his mind raced, the scales of paternal blindness dropped from Wade Courtney's eyes, and he realized that he was fighting a man who matched him in strength and height and who was his superior in speed. His only advantage lay in the experience he had gathered in 40 years of brawling. Sean threw his punch. It had all the power of the first one, and Waite knew that he could not survive that in his face, and yet he could not move to avoid it. He dropped his chin onto his chest and took Sean's fist on the top of his head. The force of it flung him backwards over the desk, but as it hit, he heard the brittle crackle of Sean's fingers breaking. Waite dragged himself to his knees, using the corner of the desk as a support, and looked at his son. Sean was doubled up with pain, holding his broken hand against his stomach. Waite pulled himself to his feet and sucked in big breaths of air. He felt his strength coming back. "All right," he said. "If you want a fight, then we fight." He came round the desk, moving slowly, his hands ready, no longer underestimating his man. "I'm going to knock the daylights out of you," announced Waite. Sean straightened up and looked at him. There was agony in his face now, but the anger was there also. Something surged up inside Waite when he saw it. "He can fight and he's game. Now we'll see if he can take a beating." Rejoicing silently, Waite moved in on him, watching Sean's left hand, disregarding the broken right, for he knew what pain was in it. He knew that no man could use a hand in that condition. He shot out his own left hand, measuring with it, trying to draw Sean. Sean sidestepped, moving in past it. Waite was wide open for Sean's right, his broken right, the hand he could not possibly use. And Sean used it with all his strength into Waite's face. Waite's brain burst into bright colours and darkness. He spun sideways, falling, hitting the leopard skin rug with his shoulder and sliding with it across the floor into the fireplace. Then in the darkness he felt Sean's hands on him and heard Sean's voice. "Pa? Oh, my God. Pa? Are you all right?" The darkness cleared a little, and he saw Sean's face, the anger gone from it, and in its place worry that was almost panic. "Pa, oh my God, please, Pa!" Waite tried to sit up, but he couldn't make it. Sean had to help him. He knelt next to Waite, holding him, fumbling helplessly with his face, trying to brush the hair back off his forehead, stroking the rumpled beard into place. "I'm sorry, Pa. Truly, I'm sorry. Let me help you to the chair." Waite sat in the chair and massaged the side of his jaw. Sean hovered over him, his own hand forgotten. "What did you want to do? Kill me?" asked Waite ruefully. "I didn't mean it. I just lost my temper." "I noticed," said Waite. "I just happened to notice that." "Pa, about Gary. You don't have to say anything to him, do you?" Waite dropped his hand from his face and looked at Sean steadily. "I'll make a bargain with you," he said. "I'll leave Gary out of it if you promise me two things. One, you never lie to me again." Sean nodded quickly. "Two, if anybody ever takes a whip to you again, you swear to me you'll give him the same as you just gave me." Sean started to smile, and Waite went on gruffly. "Now, let's have a look at your hand." Sean held it out, and Waite examined it, moving each finger in turn. Sean winced.
Saw?
Asked Waite.
He hit me with that. Sweet Jesus, I've bred a wild one.
A little.
Sean was white-faced again.
It's a mess, said Waite. You'd better get into town right away and let Dr. Van have a look at it.
Sean moved towards the door.
Hold on.
Sean stopped, and Waite pulled himself out of his chair.
I'll come with you. It'll be all right, Pa. You stay and rest.
Waite ignored this and walked towards him.
Really, Pa, I'll be all right on my own. I'm coming with you,
Waite said harshly. And then softly, almost inaudibly,
I want to, damn it.
He lifted his arm as though to put it around Sean's shoulders, but before it touched him, he let it drop back to his side, and together they went out into the corridor.